so stupid, he comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone!
Here's to the next 1,000. It can't be any worse than what we just saw. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. You are the world champion! Good evening, everybody. Welcome to episode 187 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighbourhood host, Mr. Andre Harrison. And we are back for what is the first half of a double recording this week, because we had four major motorsport weekends. Well, depends what you define as major, but of what we all cover here, all four of our major series, actually five if you count World Superbikes now, had racing this weekend. So we thought, instead of having a 14-hour podcast this week, we thought we'd split it in two and see how we go, basically. So this should be a fun time for all involved. joining me, as always, we had Tiger Roll win the Grand National, we had Tiger win the Masters, and now we have our own animal, our beloved King, Ryan King. Hello, sir.
I'm glad to be here. Watched all four of the big races we're covering. Kind of tired. It's a lot of racing. It's so much racing. Why?
What on earth are we going to talk about next week?
Just sit around.
It's like when you roll them up. It's like you miss a turn. That's what it feels like now. We're just gonna basically just end up just like having nothing to talk about next week. You might have to tear up the script for next week. That's gonna be fun, isn't it? Because you know we're well structured and professional on this podcast, isn't that right? Our colleague from Nashville, Mr. RJ O'Connell.
You don't have to worry about me getting up to no good at a Perkins restaurant.
Whoa! am I missing a reference here?
Well, it ties into one of the great sporting events, and how improbable it was that that one of them managed to come back to the top step.
Well, do you mean Thomas Lüthi winning in Moto 2?
No. Thomas Lüthi wasn't having extramarital affairs.
Tiger back, y'all!
Tiger back.
You know what's funny? It's like people say when it comes to sports sometimes that a guy moves the needle. Like, Tiger Woods is not the needle. He is the rev counter, the dashboard, and the entire car when it comes to golf. And what happens? Tiger wins the fucking Masters. And he probably should have won it by two clear shots, too. I don't even know how this happened. I was watching it at work on Sunday, and I'm like, when Molinari put it in the drink at the 12th, I just sat there going, oh no, this is actually going to happen now, isn't it? It's like, is this happening? Is this actually happening? It's happening! It's happening!
I don't really watch golf, but I did fall in love with the story of Thai golfer Kiradesh Appabhanrat, the John Daly of East Asia, the man who owns 15 pairs of Yeezys and plays golf to own more Yeezys, vapes on the front nine and the back nine, and bombs around the streets of Bangkok doing 200 miles an hour in his Lamborghini.
My hero. I want to meet this man and basically kiss his feet. that is the life I aspire to live. Like, who needs 15 Yeezys? Sneakerheads. That's who. Says a guy that owns literally four pairs of Air Max 97s. Guilty as charged, Your Honor. but that is an actual thing. I was watching it at work, and like I said, Molinari puts it in the water on the 12th, and I was like, oh god. Oh god, it's happening. It's happening. And I was just leaving work when he sunk the 18th, and I'm just like, wow. I just said, wow, my first thought was Tiger needs to come on home because those ball patches are getting bigger. But also, wow, he's actually won the Masters. That was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. So that's that's a hell of a reference. Congrats to Tiger, because it makes for a great story, even if part of it is mostly self-inflicted. But hey, that's part of the beauty of it, I suppose, and that's okay. So, in the first half of this doubleheader, we'll be talking about hashtag race 1000, the 1000th. Hang on, just checking my notes here. Formula One Championship race. Just wanted to make sure I got that right, because people get very pedantic about these things on this here internet.
And it's dumb.
But,
you could just tell everybody that it was the 1000th car race, and everyone will believe it.
Something like that. We'll figure it out later. But yes, it was a race 1000. It was certainly a thing. According to Lando Norris, it was race 5000, depending on what tweet you see of his. And we'll talk about that and the dominant Mercedes 1-2 finish. Ferrari basically cooking the goose once again on that one. A bunch of drama up and down the field, but not a lot of actual action. But hey, we'll break it down here in some entertaining manner. We will also cover Formula E, and everyone's favourite free-to-play racing driver finally got the first W for Jaguar Racing. Ironically, one race after they fire Nelson Piquet. I'm sure that's purely a coincidence. as our friend and yours, Mitch took Rome and conquered it. And we got a massive pile-up on lap one, because who doesn't love a good pile-up? They're always fun. Apart from the red flag that came afterwards. And we'll talk about Japan, a rained-out Super GT race, and a Super Formula preview as well, led by one Mr. RJ O'Connell, who basically had a good job not putting out all of his hair over the course of the weekend. More on that later. Check back as well for episode 188 later on this week. Well, beautifully named Rinse and Repeat, from thanks to one Henry Chapman. Hope you're enjoying the show today, mate. He's in the Discord server right now. We'll be talking about MotoGP's Grand Prix of the Americas, or as RJ likes to say, you mean Marc Marquez didn't win? Yeah, more on that later. IndyCar's Grand Prix of Long Beach is mentioned, as Alex Rossi basically laid out the beat him down, and, well, quite a high ranking being that. I'll debate on that by the time we get around to recording it. And while Superbikes at Assen, guess who won both races? No.
What about the basically race? What about the race that might not be a race, depending on how you view races?
More on that later. Let's just say the weather took a turn for the worse. It was not a good day for Saturday racing. Let's put it that way. All of that over the next two episodes of fun on Motorsport 101 for your listening pleasure. Or visual pleasure, depending on how you look at it. Apparently we are still a visual medium in some places. But, yes. Places you can find us before we get into the nitty-gritty. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. In the time since I last uploaded, I've put 3 videos up on YouTube. 3! No, I don't quite know how I pulled that off either. So videos all about, the state of play at Ferrari after Bahrain's funny Grand Prix. A 23-minute special talking about World Superbikes. Again, don't quite know how I pulled that one off either. It's like probably the only World Superbike-related video blog on YouTube. So that must be worth a watch. Talking about Alvaro Bautista's dominance and what the sport can do about it in that sense. It was pretty crazy. And a video I put up today talking about, and this is a minor spoiler, as what I'll get into early on in the next segment, the title, Why I Couldn't Stand F1's Race 1000. And it's not for the reason you expect. All of that on YouTube currently as we speak. More on that as well on Facebook, facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101, our personal handles. You can follow at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, that's with 2 Ks, and at RJ O'Connell. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to the shows via Patreon at least 24 hours before the show goes out. As well as also, if you book us at the $10 level, you get into the supporters club of our Discord server where you can listen to these shows live as you go out. Massive audience this time around. Shout out to Toki, to Steve, to Henry. Charles is in here. Josette's in here as well. Brian's in here. And Cam. Thank you all for listening. Hope you guys enjoy these shows tonight because we're recording two of these at the same time, which is pretty crazy. So hope you guys enjoy that. Thank you very much for tuning in. Much appreciated as always. And you can find all of that on our website, motorsport101.com. So after this creative musical interlude, we'll come back and we'll talk about the 1,000th Formula One World Championship race, the 2019 Chinese Grand Prix. Sadly, on this network, we don't have 60-second montages to help hype up a race that didn't feel special at all. But yeah.
It sure was a race 1,000, all right. It definitely was a 1,000th race, by the letter of the law.
It existed. We can confirm it did happen.
What happened?
Sure.
Last year at Shanghai was good!
It was really good.
What happened here, lads?
Cars too far apart.
Mercedes basically teabagged everybody again. It wasn't great.
Yeah.
Let's cut to the chase here. It was a pretty boring Grand Prix. It was a bit of a nothing burger in that sense. I love that one of the reasons why Charles puts in the cat is that Verstappen behaved himself. He did.
He drove
a great race, to be fair.
Best part of the weekend was Lando Norris on social media after the race, which says everything.
Six, lap one we go. Lando Norris, Carlos Sainz, and Danny Kvyat all try to go 3-1 into turn six. That leads to Lando Norris posting on social media the perspective from him getting tipped over and then flying into space because Lando Norris is living on race 5,000 while everyone else is on race 1,000.
I normally hate this meme, but because the beat is so fucking brilliant, I can't help it. Sorry, got distracted there, but yeah, Danny Kvyat was basically caught in an unfortunate McLaren sandwich, and was later given a drive-through penalty for his trouble. I have to say, I think that was a very harsh penalty. I don't think you could totally blame Kvyat for that one, really.
I watched it back, and it felt like this is just a reputation call against a driver who has the really the undeserved reputation of being an uncontrollable head case. I mean, he's looked rough at some points, but it wasn't deliberately trying to wreck him.
I put it in the very broad bin of lap one incident. Probably leave that one alone. It just happens when you try to put 20 F1 cars into a very tight, like, right-angled corner. You're going to get some shit, unfortunately. And that was one of them, unfortunately. It was a shame. But, yeah, Kvyat was caught on that one. At the other end of the field, we had a Mercedes front-row lockout. Valtteri Bottas actually narrowly pipping Hamilton to pole position again on this one. So Bottas starting from pole. I still find it crazy that we're three races in and neither Bottas or... Sorry, neither Hamilton or Vettel has a pole position yet this year.
Yeah, that's
funny
wild.
Funny that, isn't it? That is wild to me that it's the reserves that have started from the front this year, or the number two drivers, however you want to label them in that sense. But Valtteri beating Hamilton head-to-head in qualifying for the second time in three rounds this year. Good to see. And Vettel narrowly beating Leclerc by a couple of hundredths over the line. And Charles Leclerc being such a wholesome good boy he is, immediately blames himself. That boy is so wholesome. I can't wait for the internet to turn on him. It's going to be hilarious. It happens with everybody. You just don't know it yet, internet. Listen to me now. Listen to me now. Believe me later on. You just don't know it yet, people. And I'm going to be honest here, you know, the start was pretty straightforward. I mean, Vettel had such a good launch.
Whoa. We shouldn't leave qualifying yet because four cars failed to make the line to start their final, you know, their final hot lap.
That's a very good point. So, including both the Red Bulls, if I recall.
Yes, both the Red Bull and both the Haas cars failed to make the line, and this left both the Haas cars failing to set any time in Q3.
Oh, yeah. And, like, Max Verstappen took to social media and took to the internet in interviews very quickly to basically say, there's a gentleman's agreement, apparently, that if they're like that in the last sector, you just let them go, basically. And I love that was on Instagram as a quote. And then in the comments was Lewis Hamilton, who had a one-word response. Nope. I love that Max Verstappen apparently, like, I know it's year 5 for Max now in F1, which is even more terrifying to say, but it's like, I love that, like, he thinks he knows more in F1 than the 13-season veteran in Lewis Hamilton that's well into 200-plus races now at this point. That's hilarious to me. So, yeah, I am, like, Vettel clearly ignored that request on track, and then Hamilton destroys him off track. I am, quite frankly, the Church of Dre, as an official stance says, please feel free to dunk on Max Verstappen at every given opportunity. Praise be. Praise be. That was hilarious.
I should mention what he said over team radio in Q3 after that incident. Quote, they are such wankers, honestly. Everybody just lining up and they're just fucking it up. You're just trying to be nice, but everybody's just fucking it up.
This sounds like some Limp Bizkit lyrics, honestly. Everybody's trying to be nice, but they're just fucking it up. Yeah.
That's magnificent. It's his way or the highway. I love that that's Max's idea of being nice on track. That's hilarious to me. Like, the most ruthless man F1 has had in the best part of a decade is coming in here pretending like he's suddenly being nice. God bless him, that's cute. That's so cute. We were already laughing from Saturday night, basically having the elite in F1 dunk on Max Verstappen, praise be. But when he got to the race start itself, I mean, Hamilton pretty much beat Bottas to turn one and was not really challenged after that. Vettel got a very good launch, but unfortunately was boxed in. Thankfully, this time he didn't drive into the Mercedes directly in front of him, which is useful. Leclerc passed him into third place, and we got early kerfuffle, because for the third race in a row, Ferrari played team orders early on and told Leclerc to move aside and let Sebastian Vettel through. Gentlemen, without trying to piss off half the internet, what is your stance on this?
Fair game.
Be careful. Be careful. I see pitchforks being lit in the background outside.
I think it was the right call. It was the right. Vettel was clearly faster than Leclerc.
And that's why they probably should have done it a lot sooner.
Yeah, it's like, while King is currently being massacred, I would just like to say that the delegation of Sebastian Vettel says, ha! But he also says, I think that was the right call. If anything, I think Ferrari did what they did in Germany last year, and they probably left it too late. They probably did it 3 or 4 laps too late, and by that point, by the time that Sebastian had gotten some clear air in front of Charles, and they were trying it, they couldn't swap him back round again because Verstappen was now in range, and they didn't want to leave themselves vulnerable to an attack from behind. It did take Vettel 2 or 3 laps to get his momentum. But by that point, Leclerc's tyres were probably a little bit cooked anyway, and Vettel had probably chewed up a lot of his by running so close to Leclerc for the early parts of the race. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like Ferrari, for once, people, I think, on the internet understood the team orders call. If anything, they just did it too late. The timing was off, and that's probably what did him in. Mm-hmm. And it sucks that Leclerc was the one that missed out here. However, because I know a lot of the internet have been very quick to say, but they screwed Charles, I have one thing to say in response to this. Where was all of you in Australia when they put Sebastian on the way too early undercut strategy? Anyone?
It's a fair point. And, you know, they still would have had a Ferrari 3-4, you know, arguably, if they didn't leave Charles out too long of that one stop.
Right. they would have had at least a shot at it in that sense. They effectively waved the white flag in the battle against Verstappen by putting Leclerc in for a second stop. He got completely butt-rushed in this one. And sadly, as much as I hate to admit it, and this is going to sound terrible coming from the Sebastian Vettel fan of the internet, but people are only making a fuss about this because Leclerc was the victim and not Sebastian. Because again, I sat here saying, hey, I think Sebastian was the victim here, and I got laughed at because it's Sebastian. And I get that the internet's kind of turned on him for not being the Lewis Hamilton stopper we all want him to be, but here's a secret, and this might piss off quite a lot of the internet here. Charles isn't as good as you want him to be just yet.
Just yet. He's got time. Again, this is a third race for Ferrari, and he knew going into the season that Sebastian Vettel was going to be the lead driver.
It's not like Ferrari have surprised anybody here by doing this. Ferrari were open and upfront about this in the off-season. They were going to be favouring Sebastian. Like, what I find amazing about this is that half the internet seems to be shocked about this. Like, Ferrari's never pulled team orders before.
Yeah, the fact that Ferrari even had to, you know, preempt that with an announcement saying this. Like, everyone knew before. It's like, people love Ferrari, but they also love dunking on Ferrari while loving Ferrari at the same time.
That's just it. The amount of, like, the Church of Drake was open after the race, and the amount of Ferrari fan apologists out there that hated the fact that their team basically screwed Leclerc over, and I'm like, you're a Ferrari fan. Are you new here? Like,
this is the only team that which we give a shit about the fact that they employ team orders to begin with. They're the reason why we had a team orders ban, and there's a reason, and they're the reason why we had to remove the team orders ban, because they're the reason why they got around it.
You know what's funny about this? You know what's even more like hypocritical about all of this? There's one team in the paddock that have employed and had their drivers break team orders multiple times, arguably more so since the hybrid era began in 2014. They're the guys in silver known as Mercedes. And no one seems to get all mad and pissy about it until Russia last year, when Valtteri had to literally cough up a win. That's how far it had to go before people finally got pissy with Mercedes employing team orders, even though they lied about not having team orders in 2014, only to use them in Hungary when Rosberg was holding up a rampant Hamilton going through the field, when Rosberg was the victim then. But hey, nobody gave a shit about Rosberg then, only in 2016 when he was more of a threat towards Hamilton to begin with, and he'd actually stopped trying to basically lick Hamilton's arsehole. It was ridiculous. Like, Mercedes are just as guilty as this in the modern era, but yet we still pin this on Ferrari. Now, a lot of this is revisionist history. I understand that. I mean, some guy called Michael being on that team probably didn't help, given, you know, it was Michael's team for, what, a decade, more or less? Uh-huh. And I know that's not ideal, but this team orders thing only seems to get brought up when it's Ferrari and when the victim is someone we universally like Rubens Barrichello in the past, like Felipe Massa, you know, pre-2010, and now Charles Leclerc, because we all want Charles to be the greatest thing to happen to F1 since sliced bread. And it's not as simple as that. I just wish we as fans applied a bit more nuance to it more than anything else. This ends off one of those Dre rants I end up having on this show every once in a while. I don't like those. Help. Well, I just don't like how team orders always, like, draws this battle line, even though, as we've seen in F1 on numerous occasions, it's like, they are divisive, but they're a necessary evil. Like, otherwise, teams would never be able to control their drivers, mm-hmm. and that, as much as it sucks, it kind of has to happen that way. A team's got to protect itself sometimes, and that's the nature of a sport where we forget it is a team sport, but we care more about individuals, and that's a big part of the problem that we as fans have on the other side of the glass. But hey, Ferrari still stinks strategically, and that pisses me off.
Yeah, jeez, yeah. They blew it with Leclerc even after the fact. They left him out too long in that one stop. They left him vulnerable to Max Verstappen jumping him, and they left 2 points off the table. Those 2 points can become important later on down the road. Then I look at the Constructors' Championship gap. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's not ideal. And now Ferrari are already 57 points behind Mercedes, who had their third consecutive 1-2 finish. The best start they have ever had to an F1 season. I want to say that's the first time I think since Williams in the 90s where a team has had 92. Three straight 1-2s.
92? 92 with the FW14B of Mansell and Patrese, that a team has started the season with three straight 1-2s.
You know what's also terrifying about that? I was born in 1992. Jesus Christ.
You know what's even more terrifying with that? None of the Schumacher era Ferraris pulled that off.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy when you think about it that way. Because they had like two cars in that era that were completely busted. So yeah, Mercedes have the greatest start to an F1 season in 26 years. 27 years, technically speaking. And yeah, they completely curb-stomped Ferrari, who once again were caught with their pants down. This time, Vettel third was going to have the fastest lap bonus points. Red Bull basically sacrificed Gasly in a redundant sixth place. He was way behind anyway, and they put him out on a pair of brand new super softs so he could set the fastest lap. And I'm pretty sure he was only fastest lap by like a tenth, even though he was on brand new super soft tires with virtually no fuel in the car.
Yeah.
That's hilarious to me.
Oh, goodness. And it's well documented that Pierre Gasly is struggling to come to grips with the Red Bull car. Mats is coming along just fine with it. He split the Ferraris and finished a respectable fourth. Pierre's still got to get around this car. And until he does, it may be a long season ahead of him. That said, very cheeky for Red Bull to take that fastest lap away from him, knowing that Gasly was just like, I'm 30 seconds behind the next person, but I'm 30 seconds ahead of everybody else, because no matter how struggle-icious they are, they're still way ahead of everybody else in Formula 1.5.
It includes the pit stop, but Pierre Gasly finished 1 minute and 2 seconds behind his teammate. Yikes. Yeah. It's not great. It's not pretty. Other story, I mean, shout out to Max Verstappen. I mean, yeah, he behaved himself. He had an audacious attempt to pass Sebastian on the crossover during the pit stops. It didn't come to be. Vettel was very rough on that one. Put him on the grass a little bit there, but well defended. Good hard racing. It was literally the highlight of the entire Grand Prix outside of Verstappen spinning on the formation lap. but we got a little bit of action. A very, very little amount of action. But hey, we'll take it, right? like I said, Verstappen fourth. Drove. That was an excellent race from Max to even put the Ferrari under any sort of pressure and was being able to split them. Yeah, some of that was down to basically just, you know, Ferrari incompetence, but still a very well-driven performance. It says a lot when Luke Smith was the only gave Verstappen a 10 for his performance for the weekend, the only 10 he gave out all weekend, which I think probably missed out one other person involved in that list, and we'll get to him in a minute. Mm-hmm. But Verstappen fourth, Gasly sixth for Red Bull with Charles Leclerc in the middle. Our Formula 1.5 race winner, Daniel Ricciardo, ladies and gentlemen.
He's Hooray! On the board. He's finally on the board. As we were worried that, you know, he might not be when Nico Hülkenberg had a mechanical failure on lap 17.
Oh, God. Not ideal. Not ideal. Another MGUK failure for Hülkenberg and the other car. Renault, power units, come on, guys. Get it together. it was not ideal, but yeah, a solid finish for Daniel Ricciardo there. I mean, that could be a fun driver matchup to watch over there, because I think there was only about 4 thousandths between them in qualifying. Very, very tight between those two again. Again, like I always tell people on the internet, I think Hülkenberg is a bit better than people give him credit for. But that's the internet for you. Low-key shout-out to Sergio Perez, ladies and gentlemen, because that start he had was spectacular.
Whew! Goodness, and he was on the harder compound tires, starting from 12th, and he ended up finishing in 8th.
Yeah, brilliant drive from Perez there. Very quiet, but he went about his business, had a brilliant start, took advantage of the other cars around him, played a brilliant strategy, and got a brilliant 8th place. Well done for him. Great drive for him in racing points in 8th place there. I mentioned it as well, Kimi Raikkonen in 9th, but driver of the day, official driver of the day winner, a man who, after a horrifying wreck in FP3. Alex Albon had to start race from the pit lane. And sadly, most of this we only got to see on YouTube this morning when F1 put the video up for it on their official YouTube channel. But Alex Albon, from the pit lane, scores a point in 10th place. An outstanding drive.
Marvelous.
From the young TIE fighter.
Marvelous.
Drive of the weekend, maybe drive of the season so far from Alex Albon. That is stunning. To come up through the 10th place like that. That
for me was the highlight of the race. And he did this without a safety car intervention.
Did it. Purely on track with pure pace and overtaking alone, including a brilliant dive bomb on Kevin Magnussen into turn 4.
Oh, what a pass.
Ballsy for a man in just his third ever F1 race to stick one on arguably the most aggressive defensive driver in the field, in Kevin Magnussen. Brave, very brave, and a very, very well-earned point. Brilliant, brilliant drive from Alex Albon to round off the points in 10th place. Like I said, probably driver of the season so far. Brilliant stuff from the young Thai. Romain Grosjean in 11th, Lance Stroll 12th, K-Mag in 13th. Carlos Sainz, he was caught in that early collision with him, Danny Kvyat and Lando Norris, was 14th. Bit of a struggling weekend for McLaren in general, but they kind of expected it, to be fair. Antonio Giovinazzi still getting to grips with the Alfa Romeo in 15th, ahead of both Williams, George Russell and Robert Kubica. 16th and 17th, the latter spinning on the formation lap, which Robert himself said was the most entertaining thing about the race he was in.
He's not wrong, though.
No joke. And he finished two laps down. Only three DNFs. Lando Norris retired on lap 50 before they just parked the car. Wasn't any point continuing. Wasn't going to get any sort of result on the day. Danny Kvyat, who retired due to damage from the car in the earlier incident on lap 1. And Nico Hülkenberg, who had an MGUK failure, as mentioned earlier. And as Cam pointed out in the chat, that's Renault's fourth MGUK failure in the last three races. So this season, so far, they've had four MGUKs fail on them. That is alarming. As mentioned, bonus point goes to Pierre Gasly in the Red Bull, so he takes 9 points instead of 8. Yay. Driver standings real quick. We'll get through those quickly. Lewis Hamilton now leads the championship. Stop me if you're surprised at this. He has a 6-point lead on Valtteri Bottas in second on 62 points to 68. Max Verstappen is third overall right now with 39 points. Playing spoiler for Red Bull Racing. Sebastian Vettel in fourth with 37 points. He's got one more than Charles Leclerc on 36. Pierre Gasly on 13. And still leading the Formula 1.5 championship is Kimi Raikkonen. With 12 points for Alfa Romeo. He's got a 4-point lead on Lando Norris with 8, as does K-Mag. Hülkenberg and Daniel Ricciardo have 6. Constructor standings go after 3 rounds, and it's kind of a terrifying sign. Mercs have a near-perfect 130 points. Only missing out on 2 fastest laps over the course of the race. Races so far, Charles Leclerc having the fastest lap in Bahrain and Pierre Gasly having the fastest lap in China. So they have 130 out of a possible 132 available points so far this season. And they already have a 57-point lead on Ferrari with 73. Red Bull Racing in 52 points, they're 19 behind in third. And yes, it's a bit of a gap. 40 points to Renault in fourth on 12, ahead of Alfa Romeo also on 12. Haas and McLaren on 8 each, racing point of 7. Scuderia Toro Rosso with 4 points, and Williams yet to score. Now, just before we move on as well and whatnot, is it just me, or did this 1,000th race not feel very special at all?
No, not really.
Not really. Like, there's been
a few weeks of hype. Some neat historical videos on F1's YouTube channel, but you know, not really the pomp and pageantry that you would expect from an event like this.
It's amazing that I think the people that cared the most about this was the drivers. Like, we saw a lot of the drivers had special one-off helmet designs for this race. Romain Grosjean did. George Russell had a sweet Juan Pablo Montoya tribute, which, as I mentioned in the video, if we're seeing tribute helmets for Juan Pablo Montoya, I am officially old as dirt.
God, I know the feeling.
Look at Jack. Whoop. Look at the Jack Brabham tribute helmet from Daniel Ricciardo. Renault probably won the throwback helmet game.
They did. Both Hülkenberg and Ricciardo had very simple, old school designs. Old stickers on the front of the helmet, like the olden days. Very nice touch. They win the award for best Fun Thousand helmet tribute. I loved them on that one. That was an awesome bit of work from Ricciardo and Hülkenberg there. Like I said, if Juan Pablo was still racing in F1 in 2006,
and Juan Pablo Montoya is still racing now for a right. factory team in America.
He was he lost an IndyCar championship on Countback 3 years ago.
Fuck me!
And he's got tribute helmets from the young man from King's Lynn. I don't understand this. I feel old. I feel old as dirt. Just Jesus Christ.
Let me just do I'm just in my head doing the math. When Juan Pablo Montoya won the Indianapolis 500 for the first time, most of the F1 field were children.
Well, yeah, the average age of the field is, remember, half the field is now 26 or less. So it's like, they're my age. I was a kid when Montoya won that Indy race.
I was 8. No, Terry, they were younger than us.
Don't remind me. I was trying to forget that part.
If I may, I've got some midfield observations. Renault are performing about to par, but reliability is sketchy. McLaren have so much potential, but it's being squandered. Alfa Romeo, kind of a one-man show. I'm actually surprised that Gio's not wrapping it around the Alfa so much. Toro Rosso, to me, probably the surprise of the midfield. Where the hell has Haas's race pace gone?
it's gone early this year.
Yeah, they just, I guess they don't have the energy for these long races.
like I said, normally the form goes by Singapore. It's actually got early this year, which is not a promising sign. And this is with Grosjean actually finishing and not been in it half the time. It's crazy. But like I said, there was almost more care out of the drivers than F1 itself. I mean, we had a special champagne bottle. That was nice. It was red. We were like 1,000 branded on the side. We had the 1,000 badge on the trophy, which is another sponsor trophy, and it looked terrible, you know, and we had, a photo shoot, but the legend section had Karim Chanhok in it. I just feel I mentioned this in the video, but, if you saw the legend section of the picture, 80% of it was pundits, guys who we see on TV every race weekend anyway. Martin Brundle, who, as I've mentioned, legendary broadcaster, F1 driver.
Yeah, I think
not so much.
Just the logistics of trying to get everything that you would need to represent the history of Formula One, which the vast majority of it is in Europe, over to Shanghai for just one weekend is ludicrously difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that was what Henry said in the comments on my YouTube video. The logistics of having the 1,000th Grand Prix in China was probably what made this so goddamn difficult. Let's not beat around the bush. The heart of this series is in Europe. It always has been. It probably always will be. And if you had it, for example, in a couple of races' time in Catalunya, I think it'd probably be a lot easier to pull off.
But that's the problem. You can't plan for that. You can't, not going to have Formula One for, a couple months because we want F1 1000 to be at a specific time of the year.
Yeah, you can't do that given that we're already crammed getting a calendar in that goes into December for the first time ever this year. Jesus. You just can't do that. So it had to be China. I mean, I know they tried to get it at Silverstone, but Silverstone was like, no.
April? No.
When it's bound to piss down with rain? No chance. No one is coming out for a Grand Prix in Britain in April. I guarantee you that. Take it from the one British guy that's still on the show. Jesus. Not happening, people. Not happening. They lose money when they run it in July for $140,000 on race day. Good luck pulling that off in April. Jesus Christ. Not happening. So the logistics of that were a nightmare. The photo shoot was a nightmare. It just did not feel special as a 1,000th Grand Prix. But hey, we had a 60-second YouTube montage that we had, you know, after on the world feed after they showed the 2019 Chinese Grand Prix F1000. We had like a neat little video which they immediately put up on YouTube afterwards, so it didn't feel as special. And it's actually kind of sad that they had that intro there when they had a better intro montage for when Brian Tyler's new theme was debuted.
But the thing is that intro video that they used is just a repackage. They just repackaged the footage that they used for that remix video that they used to launch the season.
Oh, yeah, that one, the video. And, like, that had footage from, like, the last two races in it. Like, races 998 and 999. It's like, you want to talk about the history of F1, and you've put, like, the last two races in there that literally nothing special happened. It's kind of a shitter on that one. But,
well, hey now, a lot of those races didn't have us reacting to it, overset with Keith Mansfield's Love Deluxe on it.
This is true.
Oh, Lord.
Verdict on the race, just watch the highlights.
Yeah.
Actually just watch the Albon montage.
That's about it. That's all you need to see.
And then after the montage, just watch that, you know, that short video that Lando Norris posted.
And Sergio Perez's thoughts on Pedro De La Rosa's Twitter page. Go watch that. That'll do it. It's actually shorter if you put them all in one line than actually watching the 5:44 race montage highlights they put up on their YouTube channel. I gave it a 3 out of 10. I thought it was one of the weakest Grand Prix I've watched in quite some time. It was a nothing burger. There was nothing fun about that race at all. We had one real on-track incident between Verstappen and Vettel. There was nothing else intriguing in terms of race action to watch. We didn't get a strategic fight for the win. Hamilton was never really threatened for victory the whole way through. If anything, it was actually more infuriating to watch see Ferrari be so fucking incompetent with their strategy while watching it in real time. Like, what are they doing? It ends up pissing you off more than anything else. The TV director was woeful during this Grand Prix. Everyone else noticed this.
Yeah, he was asleep at the wheel.
The amount of cutaways and, like dodgy cameramen who were just flopping on, like, the main street trying to, like, oh, we're going to be artsy and we're going to lean back on the main street and see if we can get the shot of Hulkenberg coming down it or Ricciardo. And I'm like, the directors were asleep. They must have had Fernando Alonso operating the cameras. That wasn't ideal either. It was everything I don't like about F1 in one 50-plus lap package. It was just a poor Grand Prix, and it was made to be even worse when you consider this was the 1,000th race, and it just didn't feel special on F1 then either.
Honestly, no one would have, like, if they didn't market it as being a big event, no one would have cared as much. They raised people's ambitions for no reason other than to, like, pop ratings like they're Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
That's the thing. Like, they hyped up, they've been doing this for, like, over a season. They've been slowly counting down to 1,000 in graphics packages and those light screens and those photoshopped, CGI'd in posters saying, yeah, count down to 1,000, this is the 1,000th Grand Prix, and then the 1,000th Grand Prix, nothing special happens. It's just, it was a branding exercise, and that's what makes it so frustrating, because who owns Formula One? A fucking media company, a media mogul runs this sport, and they just don't know how to do media properly. That's what's the most alarming part of this. It's like, Liberty Media run this sport. A media company was trying to hype up their own product, and they couldn't even do that properly. No special graphics outside of, you know, a few extra stats that were put up on the screen at the beginning and the end of the race.
It's like, know, did you know that the first Grand Prix was in Britain in 1950, Trey?
Yes, I did. And I'd be surprised that more people probably know that than they actually give credit for. Yes, Nino Farina won the first ever Grand Prix. Yes, I know it was in 1950. Guys, you can do better than this. And that was the whole, that was what I noticed when I was watching it most. It was like, it just didn't feel special. And that was the most infuriating part of just watching the races, that if you didn't know any better, you would have had no idea that was the 1,000th championship race. And something that you'd think was a great milestone and it just wasn't. It was just another Grand Prix, and that's what makes me sad, because I think they dropped the ball huge on this one. Maybe not from a... They could have said, double points for the 1,000th race, and I'm like, okay, cool. I'd have actually been surprisingly okay with that, for the most part. I was like, okay, it's a 1,000th race, it's a one-off, we're going to raise the stakes, I get it. I wouldn't necessarily agree with it, but I'd be like, okay, I get why you've done it. Nothing.
I think it would have been better off if they never did anything at all. Because
right,
one of the things that Autosport posted in the lead up to this event is pretty much looking back at all the other landmark races in F1 history and going in reverse. Okay, Grand Prix 900 was the 2014 Bahrain Grand Prix, which is a classic, which they pretty much got lucky that it was the 900th race, but they didn't advertise it as such. It just happened to fall that way. Race 800, the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix.
Ooh. Oh, that would have been interesting.
I think 700. Let me pull it.
Yeah, 800 was special because, again, that was the first F1 night race.
Yeah, it was the first night race.
That's totally what they remember it for. Totally.
Totally what they remember.
In retrospect, no.
Nothing else of importance happened during that 800th race at Singapore in 2008.
Yeah, Grand Prix 700 was 2003 Brazil, and it's like, ooh, generally, for the most part, it's very hit or miss on whether your landmark race is going to be good or not.
But Brazil never... 2003, the race that had 5 safety cars, Rubens have a heartbreaking DNF that would have cost him a home win, that enormous wreck that basically almost broke Fernando Alonso's back, and a race win that was given to Giancarlo Fisichella a week later. If you haven't seen Brazil 2003, go out of your way to see it. It's a race that I recommend everyone sees at least once. I was about to call it the Turn 3 of Poor Judgment. Watch it. You'll know why I called it that.
yeah. 600 was 600 was 1997 Argentina. 500 was 1990 Japan.
Nelson Piquet winning that one.
Aguri Suzuki's first podium.
Whoa. Nope. I'm. 500 is actually the race after that one.
Oh.
Kingbot is broken. Can someone get him some
WD-40? It was 1990 Australia, so literally no one remembered it because Japan was the race before.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure race 1001 is going to be far better than this race.
Oh god, Baku's nets.
Oh no. There's going to be a shitstorm. It's Baku. They welcome us, and all hell breaks loose.
Just watch this be the year where it's terrible again, like 2016.
Oh god, I don't know what it is about Baku, but funky shit goes down when we race at Baku. I don't know how. I don't know why. It just happens. So, wait for Max Verstappen to win this one in a creative fashion. Probably from, like, mounting Pierre Gasly and launching over the finish line or some shit.
Oh, Lord.
Speaking of mounting and launching, is that a good segue to our next race?
Yes, it is. Oh. After this quick musical interlude, we'll talk about the mount scene around the world as we talk about Formula E in Rome. So, when watching Formula E, King, did you try working the shaft?
No, because I watched it, like, just before we recorded this.
I was talking about the drive shaft, people. What did you think I meant? Like, since...
Don't mention drive shafts around a Venturi or HWA fan. Just a heads up.
Oh, dear. Now...
Yes, we're here for the One Electric Series... that is in good health and that Ryan King has not dunked on in Twitter in the last 72 hours.
Oh god, I wonder if World Rallycross blocked me.
So in case you missed it,
World Rallycross had a snarky reply to Formula E cars getting air, and it's just like, oh, hey, it's a gif of two Rallycross cars getting airborne, which, like, it's a cool gif, but they were just like, how, oh, we're gonna dunk on you because we're much cooler. And the king came back with, oh, yeah? Well, watch me post the story about your stupid decisions.
King, were you being that guy again? What guy? Yeah. That guy. King. Naughty. I told you guys, King Bot is broken.
They started it.
They started it. And you decided to finish it then, didn't you?
Yep.
Is Steven Jackson here? That's what that was right there. But, guys, can I talk about qualifying here for a minute? Because,
Anyone can win pole
in Formula E.
Can I talk about qualifying? Yes. I have to talk about Super Pole, first of all. Like, I know all the drivers are now bitching and moaning about this new qualifying format, how it goes in championship order now, and that's not ideal because... That's the best part. Like, what are you guys talking about? This is great. But Super Pole, picture the scene. It's rained overnight in Rome. It was still raining deep into the early days action. But it stopped raining for about half an hour or so. The track is drying out. So by the time we get to Super Pole, you get the general gist in racing that last man that goes out tends to get pole position because the track's at its driest. Now, the pattern goes right. As guys go out, they get faster and faster. Bremi, unfortunately, was saddled with coming out first. He did. Set a time. Gunther was about 7 tenths quicker than him. Stoffel Vandoorne blitzed it. He was about 2.4 seconds quicker than Gunther was. We get to the top three. Pochito, Jose Maria Lopez, goes to the top. He's about 3 tenths quicker. Mitch Brough is about 3 tenths faster than him. Now, picture the scene. Andre Lotterer is last man out. Lotterer's got a great shot here of his first Formula E pole position. Now, they're coming down towards the hairpin here. There's a tight hairpin about two-thirds of the way through the lap. Lotterer almost loses the car at the hairpin. Now, the Formula E TV directors here deserve a fucking pay raise for this, because this is beautiful camera work. They immediately cut to Jaguar, who are on the brink of getting a pole position with Mitch Evans, and their team boss, I can't remember their name, I'm sure RJ will, or King will tell me, I can't remember his name on top of my head right now, but their team boss, I distinctively remember fist bumping, going, come on, get in there! Thinking, yes, Jaguar was going to get on pole for the first time this season. Now, everybody thinks it's all over, but as we've seen, like, the track is drying out, and the last sector, Lotterer is carrying so much more speed. It's practically dry at the back of the track now. Lotterer goes through, finds a second in the last sector of the racetrack, steals pole position from under Jaguar, and they immediately cut back to Jaguar in the garage going, oh. Ladies and gentlemen, we have what I like to poetically call a Jacobellis moment. Oh, kids, don't ever, ever suffer what we call a very bad case of premature celebration, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know if it was because of this moment, but later on in the day, during pre-race, apparently the broadcast team had lined up an interview with their team principal, James Barclay.
That's the one.
Yep. And he was nowhere to be seen. Apparently, someone else from the team was like, yeah, he went to the toilet.
He hid from the broadcast team. That's hilarious. It was like, nope, we're not doing this. I'm sparing my blushes after being embarrassed on the live stream like that. Arguably, the funniest moment I can remember from Formula E in about 6 seasons. This is, and as Jason asked in the Discord, yes, this is clearly a Floppy Award nomination. Hello! You cannot have a premature celebration. If not, we will kill you on this show. That's how this works. Magnificent. Utterly magnificent and hilarious television. I pissed myself as that was going on. I was like, when he lost it and they cut to Jaguar, I was like, please, Lotterer, get on pole. Please. My prayers were answered. It doesn't happen very much as a racing fan. And it did. And it was beautiful. Oh, that was so good. So Andre Lotterer gets his first career pole position in Formula E. And we get to the race itself. Still, slippery conditions on the opening lap. Everyone's a little bit tentative as they launch. I felt sorry for the guys on the left-hand side of the track because it was so much dirtier on that side. But, King, we got a good old-fashioned lap one pile-up.
But I want to talk first because I just remembered Matsi Gunter going full Takumi Fujiwara initial D through the corner of the first lap. I mean, he rode off like half his car. The front wing was completely shattered, but it still looked awesome.
Deja vu. I've never been in this place before. It's on the street. That was a hell of a save. Like, oh my word. He was like 90 degrees fully sideways going down there. And yeah, that was quite the save from Maxi Gunfoot. But it was a carnage full first up. We had that. We had a Pechito Lopez himself basically bump Bird up the rear and almost put him out of the race on the opening lap.
Another untimely setback for a dude who was leading the championship not too long ago.
Three bad weekends in a row, he said after the race.
Then we get to the pile up. Folks, remember, when mounting another Formula E car, always be sure to practice it safely. And use protection.
And then yeet that meat. So, RJ, talk me through this one, because next thing you know, we had the first lap, and next thing you know, we just see a blockade of cars. Lopez is kissing the wall. Vern is underneath him, being taken from the front.
Yeah, so basically, Lopez gets it all wrong in the Cheyenne. He crashes right in front of Gary Paffett, who has nowhere to go, who crashes in front of Jean-Eric Vergne, who has nowhere to go, and Vergne goes underneath Paffett's car, and in this pileup, you also have both the Mahindra cars stop, you have Albert Turi's Neo and Daniel Abstaudi all caught in this. This brings out a lengthy red flag.
Yeah, it was as the race director pointed out, it was a 100% track blockage. No one is going anywhere. All the car keys are in the punch bowl. We had an orgy in the last sector here, folks. And it took them about half an hour to clear it all out. dear. Also, I love that the Discord chat is basically all just screaming phrasing right now, like we're all watching Archer. the Macau special.
Millions and millions and millions of dollars in damage.
I love it. It took them about half an hour to clean it up. There were some fun stories there. We had a lot of Nikki Shields in the pit lane. Who's having a baby, by the way? We didn't mention that in the last couple of shows. Congrats to Nikki Shields. She's a goodie. She's awesome. Congrats, Nikki. We had Vernon Kay doing his thing. Sam Bird was able to limp his broken drive shafted car back to the pits and was actually able to rebuild the rear of the car and fix it before the red flag was pulled out. Brilliant work from the Envision Virgin team. Give them boys a beer. Excellent work. Once again, proving that duct tape can fix anything. And I do mean anything. It's the most versatile material on earth. It's beautiful. So they're able to actually fix the car and get him back out there after the red flag. It took about half an hour to clear all the cars, clear the wreckage, fix the barriers, and actually rearrange the grid because some guys had done an extra lap because they'd already gone past, obviously, the cause of the accident. They had to go back around and basically re-loop so that they could balance the power usage out as well. It was a tricky one, but we got it shuffled out and sorted in the end. And a new rule as well, because it was a red flag, the clock didn't run. It's a new rule. It was unanimously put through by all the teams as well. They're no longer going to let the red clock, the time run on a red flag and then add it again at the end. They're now going to freeze the clock during a red flag and then restart it once the red flag is cleared. Just so you know. Because I know that was a bit of a confusing rule for fans to follow at home. So yeah, that was sorted. We got racing again. And hooray, first of all. Second of all, we had a fun little three-car dice for the win, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Let's run down the contenders real quick. In the red corner, Andre Lotterer, who had pretty much led from start to about two-thirds distance from pole for T-Cheetah. In the blue corner, free-to-play Mitch Evans, who was on the front row for Panasonic Jaguar Racing and was looking for that first big win since, I want to say, his Formula 2 days, or what was back then GP2, I should say, as it was. And in the green corner, and I'm checking my notes here, he's not been cursed by the fan boost. Apparently Stoffel Vandoorne actually had a shot at a win here. Am I reading this right?
Your eyes do not deceive you. And of course, this happened right as both the Venturi cars of Edo Mortara and Felipe Massa both broke down around the same time.
It was like, oh no. It's like, if the Venturis are both going down with drive shaft errors, like almost carbon copies of each other, within a lap of each other, everyone was immediately looking at HWA and saying, when's it going to give out? We know how this story goes. And amazingly, it didn't happen. Like, Stoffel was actually there all the way through. I think what I heard after the Race King was that I think what did Stoffel and made him drop off the leading group was I think that HWA were envisioning the fact the race was going to go one lap longer than it did.
Yeah, a lot of the teams thought that. But like, if you watch the race constantly over the radio, Jaguar were pretty much pacing Mitch Evans at the front of the field because they knew that he had to cross the line at the precise moment to end the race shorter than, you know, what everyone else thought it was going to be.
Yeah, crossing for the final lap, you know, after the time runs out, so that he didn't have to compete one extra lap. So they were like, Mitch had made a outstanding move on Lotterer just before the very tricky chicane complex, which you don't normally put down as a passing opportunity. A little bit of rubbing, but Mitch got through. They were both given warnings. That was the end of the matter, thankfully. And as a result, they were basically yelling at Mitch on the radio, "Slow down, Mitch, slow down." They didn't want to go one extra lap because if they did, they might have ran out of usable energy. So
yeah,
that was good. And this was after Mitch had actually missed an attack mode attempt as well. He had to use attack mode and he missed the second timing barrier to activate attack mode, and it almost cost them the win. And as Steve mentions, Max Gunther, who was running, I think, P6 at the time before penalties, actually ran out of usable energy and ended up finishing stone dead last out of all the finishers. Poor fella. But Mitch missed an attack mode. But honestly, I don't know about you guys, I love this race. I thought this was a fantastic race. And not for the usual Formula E reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love this race because we got a brilliant one-on-one dogfight all the way through between Mitch Evans and Andre Lotterer. We actually saw the good side. I think for the first time, I think we truly saw the good use of attack mode as a strategical element, and how that played into the race, because Mitch used attack mode first. He was able to find a way to pass Lotterer, take track position. Lotterer had to use it twice in pretty close succession and couldn't find a way around Mitch on both his attack mode attempts, and had to survive that. I loved this race. I thought it was the strategic element of the new Formula E coming into play in perfect fashion, and it had a big impact on a great lead duel between Evans and Lotterer, who shook hands and said, "Well played," to the other man after what was an excellent 90-minute Formula E marathon.
Yep. And back to last year when Rome was first added onto the calendar, I thought the circuit looked good last year, but it felt, in the previous generation of cars, it felt like the circuit was a bit too large, the cars looked a little bit slow, they couldn't take the curbs too hard or, you know, destroy their suspensions, but in the current generation of cars, the circuit is perfect.
It's wonderful.
It's great.
It was a really great race. And a good moment for Jaguar. We mentioned at the top of the show, they had just mutually parted ways with Nelsinho Piquet, the inaugural series champion.
Yeah.
Indeed, they just parted ways, and they replaced him with Alex Lynn in this round. He finished 12th this time around. Lynn's a great promise in Formula E in the races he has shown there.
Like, I mean, he didn't finish in the points at Alex Lynn, but he did mostly all right for his first time back in that car. And for Evans as well, you know, here's a guy who's come close to victories a couple of times, actually had a chance to win this event last year, and ultimately dropped down to ninth and had hardly anything to show for it. It's a good win. It's a great win for a young driver who's making Formula E something of his own instead of using it as a fallback opportunity. And it's done wonders for his championship bid, as we'll get into in a bit.
Would it be fair to say that given their driving styles, their nature, and how, you know, their position in the field, Mitch Evans might be Formula E's Alex Rossi?
You know, that's not too far off. I mean, they pretty much came up together.
It's funny that, isn't it? It's funny that they both kind of treated their respective shifts in series as like backup plans at first, but they've now really starting to gain a foothold in the series now as time goes on. Because Mitch has been pretty solid in Formula E right from the start. I think he's just had a few cases of some rotten luck on many occasions. But the talent's been there with Mitch. And again, he drove superbly in that race. That was a fantastic tactical drive. A very mature, disciplined Mitch Evans performance. Especially given he's facing Andre Lotterer, who, as Dario Franchitti pointed out during the race, he's raced a lot of things, and has been very fast in all of them. And Lotterer is a wily veteran who is more than good enough to win and be a title threat, and is an excellent, excellent racing driver. And Mitch beat him in a one-on-one dogfight. Very, very impressive indeed. I completely agree with all of that. I think Mitch is a great talent, and I'm glad that he's made it work for him in that sense. We'll give a quick rundown of the field real quick. RJ, one more time. I know you want to. Mitch Brah! Wins in Rome with just under a second from Andre Lotterer in second for T-Cheetah. Stoffel Vandoorne. Yay! Stoffel's on the podium.
He did it! Stoffel did it! His car broke down after the race. He did it! It still counts.
It counts. It counts. There's no city if you don't make it back to Parc Fermé rule. It counts. It's a third for Stoffel Vandoorne. Like, I literally said on Twitter after the race, his car broke down after the flag. Truly, the curse is lifted. the curse tried to strike him down right at the end, and it didn't quite happen. I love it. Way to go, Stoffel. He's deserved that for a good few rounds. He's been excellent in that HWA, and I'm glad he's got a really good result to show for it. That win is going to come. That car is not slow by any stretch.
No, we are stiff for stuff here.
Excuse me? Phrasing. Stoffel third and 15 points for him. Robin Frins fourth, another solid result for the Envision Virgin team there. Sadly, his teammate, not the best of days for him. Then the Edams cars of Sebastian Buemi and a surprisingly trouble-free Oliver Rowland, who, I have to say, I never thought I'd say this sentence, because I don't know if anybody saw the charity football match they had with Roma, with Roma's legendary club on Thursday. Oliver Rowland got nutmegged by Francesco Totti.
Happens to the best of them.
No shame in that. But yeah, Francesco Totti nutmegged Oliver Rowland.
He's never been the same since.
Crazy. He's going to be damaged for life. That's what happens when you literally bust a nut.
Just pull up that gif of Roland in the car during the red flag with his head against the side of the cockpit.
Yep, that just about does it. That was not him in a red flag, that was him thinking of what happened to him on the football pitch on Thursday. Poor fella. Lucas Degrassi in 7th, he actually managed to go a whole round without complaining about something. Also, I love during the red flag, a cheeky bit of commentary in the box where he's seen taking a selfie with one of the VIPs at the weekend, and Bob Varsha in the back literally goes, "Oh, Lucas Degrassi smiling."
I love you, Uncle Bob.
Uncle Bob was tremendous. We stan Uncle Bob. What a boy. Like, I love that. Like, I want to see behind the scenes of that shot. If Formula E can put the behind, they've had behind the scenes shots of their commentary box during races. I want that put on the YouTube channel. I want to see precisely what Jack and Dario's reactions were to that. I need to see that for posterity's sake. Jerome D'Ambrosio in 8th place, Antonio Felix da Costa in 9th, and Pascal Wehrlein rounding off the points in 10th, ahead of Sam Bird, who did cruise over up to 11th, but sadly no points for him. Alex Lynn in his return to the series in 12th, ahead of Oliver Turvey. John Eric Verne, who got fastest lap, but because he wasn't in the points, it does not count. Bad luck, son. Tom Dillman, 15th, ahead of Pachito in 16th. Alex Sims in 17th, who had arguably the shot of the weekend when, you know, if you saw it in qualifying, he his car broke down and he had to put over to the side and he was given a brolly. And he just sat back and he watched all the cars do the Super Bowl runs instead. And he looked like he was the happiest man in the world. It was actually really cute. Alex Sims there, everybody. Train spotter. Daniel Apt in 18th finished a lap down. And poor Maxi Günther, who ran out of usable energy and broke the rules, finished a lap down. Last of the runners in 19th place. Three DNFs. Felipe Massa and Adore Mortara both had drive shaft failures, unfortunately for Venturi. Just one round after their first win. That's very sad. And Gary Paffett, who sadly didn't use protection. and did not finish.
And I think I should run down the Drivers' Championship because it is insanely close. There are 9 drivers within 15 points of each other in the
Hit him with it, King.
How is this possible? Okay, retaking the championship lead on 65 points, Jerome D'Ambrosio.
Jerome!
Behind him on 64 points is Antonio Felix da Costa. On 62 points is Andre Lotter. On 61 points is Mitch Evans. 58 is Lucas Degrassi. 55, Robin Frins. 2 drivers on 54, Jean-Eric Verne and Sam Bird. Eduardo Montero rounds out all those within 15 points in 9th place with 52 points. And Daniel Apt in 10th with 44 points.
The top 9 are covered by 13. 13 covers the top 9 in the championship. Because it's worth pointing out, as I mentioned on social media, Mitch made it 7 races with 7 different winners from 7 different teams to start the Formula E season. Very F1 2012, if you remember how that season started out, where I think they had 7 different winners.
7 in the first 7. I remember that because that was the F1 2012 video game intro.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I do remember that. They had 7 winners from the first 7 races. They were all different, and I think from 6 different teams as well, which in F1 is unheard of these days, that 6 different teams won a Grand Prix that season. And it could have easily been 7 if Checo had cashed in at Malaysia. Jesus. It is mental in the championship right now. It is so close. No one has stood out yet. It's just crazy that every day seems to bring out a different bit of glory. And the constructors,
the constructors
super close as well.
The constructors give you a better picture because there are only 2 teams with both their drivers in the top 9 in the championship, and they also lead the constructors' championship.
Yeah, the top 4 covered by 14 points in the constructors. DXT Cheetah are now back in the championship lead of 116 points. Envision dropped to 2nd of 109. And then Mahindra and Audi Sport both have 102. Mahindra leading on countback on that one. With BMW not far behind on 82. If only Marrakesh had gone a bit better. Could you imagine how close BMW would be in all of this? Holy cow. I think I'm right in saying that I think every team has now had a driver on the podium except for Neo, I want to say.
Neo and Dragon.
Neo and Dragon are the only 2 teams that have not had a driver on the podium. Even HWA, who's 9th on 22 points, now have Stoffel for a podium finishing spot. Formula E is fucking mental this year.
And we're only halfway home.
Good lord, what is going to happen next? We'll find out in 2 weeks' time on April 27th when the Formula E literal travelling circus, figuratively and literally, heads to Paris for the French Grand Prix. Or the French E-Prix, as they should say, in Paris.
Yes.
That, are we going to get 8 different winners? Oh, boy.
Lotterers do.
Lotterers do.
Daniel Abt on a good day, maybe. Alex Sims has been very fast on occasion. He's not won a race so far this season. Pascal Wehrlein still hasn't won a race this season, and he's been ludicrously quick at times.
Yeah.
There's still plenty of potential for an eighth different winner here, which is crazy. Oh man, what a fun Formula E season we have had so far. And like I said, for me, that might be one of my favourite Formula E race to date, only because it wasn't a crazy shit show, and it was all the elements that Formula E has used in season 5 to get to this point, and it all just fit in perfectly.
Yeah.
I loved it.
When you get past the pile up, great race.
Yep.
Oh yeah, this is the race that will actually be better on the second watch, because you don't have to go through the red flag period. It will probably be even better on a rewatch, quite frankly. So that doesn't happen very often with motorsport races, but yeah, the second watch might actually be better.
Funny yeah, because you get to cut right through the red flags.
Beautiful stuff. We now cut to RJ O'Connell, our official Japanese resident correspondent, for the Japan section, as he likes to name it. Take it away, RJ.
Oh, hey, I'm so sleepy. I'm guessing you didn't get a chance to watch the season opening race of the Super GT Series at Okayama Circuit.
Afraid not, but I did see probably the highlight of the race itself, which led to JB to like the most polite Twitter rant of all time, I would say.
Okay. Well, you're not alone, because a lot of people were in that bucket. So let me just lay out a little bit of context. Super GT had been broadcast to international audiences on the Nissan Nismo YouTube channel, affectionately known as Nismo TV. And this had gone on since middle of 2014, when they partnered with Radio Show Limited, till about the end of the 2018 season. About a month ago, Nissan and Grand Central Entertainment, the production company behind Nismo TV, parted ways. Grand Central got to keep the channel that has now been rebranded as Let's Go Racing, and they had planned to get the race on for 2019, only they couldn't get the broadcast rights, and the race was not shown. That is a big deal for a series that is clearly on the rise abroad, thanks to drivers like Jenson Button and Nick Cassidy and Jan Martinborough, who were all mightily upset and could not believe that it wasn't going to be shown abroad.
Oh dear, what a hot mess.
Yeah, so that actually ended up to me at about 10 o'clock in the morning, with about 3 hours of the race to go, putting together a very F1 word and styled live stream, where it's just the live timing and my audio commentary and some stock pictures from testing.
So there was no way to legally watch any footage, not even with Japanese commentary.
No, there was not, and that's what's so infuriating. Even Nick Cassidy, who again is one of the series' top drivers, pulled out his phone during the driver introduction ceremonies, which were being broadcast, to say, "Bring back international television." He had multiple drivers grouped him, which just like, "Hey, what the hell are you doing?"
Yeah.
It says a lot when the most vocal critics of this situation are the drivers themselves. You don't normally see that, and that's quite alarming. Jeez.
Yeah, and I wish you could say you missed an incredible race, but you missed a race that was stopped after 30 of the 82 scheduled laps, and only 8 of them were run under green flag conditions, because folks, it started raining, and it didn't stop raining, and we had plenty of wrecks and plenty of carnage, including a 4-car pileup in the GT300 field that took out 3 Nissan GTRs and the new Aston Martin. And the series actually did post a video of onboard with JP Oliveira in the Aston, having basically no time to react to Kazuki Hoshino's Nissan GTR crashing right in front of him and triggering the pileup.
Punt! Puns, puns.
And of course, there was the dust up between the two Hondas of Naoki Yamamoto, who was leading. Kodai Tsukakoshi was trying to catch him. The two of them make contact. The Raybrugana set sends up in the gravel. And after a post-race time penalty is applied after the second and final red flag, which took forever for them to come out with the final result of that race, by the way, for whatever reason, we had the number 8 Arda Autobax NSX GT win the race of Tomoki Nojiri and Taka Izawa. Again, I wish I could have told you that this race was awesome and we were so hurt to have missed an absolute classic, but it just, it turned out to be a mess.
Sigh.
Yeah, for reference, and Dre, I posted in the chat for Dre as we're recording the footage of the pileup.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
oh,
luckily everybody was okay, but yeah, there were lots of wrecks, and the sponge barriers took a beating.
Oh, my God. That's a bad one.
Yeah, and I did just want to tie a loose end on what's happening with Super GT Broadcast. They're actually partnering with a Malaysian company, Haro Sports Entertainment, to be their official broadcast rights distributor. So there's a good chance that in 3 weeks' time for the Fuji 500 kilometers on May the 4th, be with you, we will have the races back on what is, it's no longer Nismo TV, it is now Let's Go Racing, and you can follow them at Go Racing Tweets, if you so choose. They may also have Super Formula coming up this weekend. As seen in Gran Turismo Sport.
Yay!
Oh, man. This is a bumper crop grid, and it's a young grid with 8 different rookies on the grid out of 20. Yeah. Now, of course, Naoki Yamamoto is your defending champion. He's with a new team at Dandelion Racing, as is former F2 driver Nare Fukuzumi, who is probably be glad that he is not jet-setting between Europe and Japan this year, because he looked a little washed doing that in 2018 with Arden.
Just a tad.
Yeah. Nick Cassidy is with Vantolin Team Toms. He's partnering the reigning Le Mans champion Kazuki Nakajima. But again, we get to the rookie class, and we get to arguably the most controversial of the rookie class, in the Red Bull Team Mugen car. Yes, Daniel Tickdom is doing Super Formula full-time.
Lord Daniel Tickdom, the fourth Esquire.
He's got a...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he's got a tough teammate in Tomoki Nojiri, who I feel is probably the most underrated of Honda's factory drivers in Japan. Won that last race, and is a very solid driver. TCS Nakajima Racing have a very fun lineup, and Alex Palou, who's a GP3 Series race winner and has been lighting it up in testing, and Tadasuke Makino, the F2 feature race winner from last year's back in Japan.
Yes.
So that is going to be awesome to see. BMATS with Motopark, that is a Japanese-German team with 2 international drivers, Austrian Lucas Auer coming over from the DTM Series, Gerhard Berger's nephew, and Adrian Newey's son, Harrison Newey, making his Super Formula debut as well.
Still a great name.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Just saying.
Yes, and I believe it is the Bullfrog Grand Prix Real Racing team have backed Tristan Charpentier, who was 12th place in the BRDC British F3 Championship. Just to put it in the context, that is 6 spots behind Billy Monger and 3 spots behind Jamie Chadwick.
Ah.
Over on the Toyota side of things, Kenta Yamashita and Yuji Kunimoto is going to be a fun team at Kondo Racing. Yamashita has been tearing it up in practice. Kamui Kobayashi in the single Team KCMG car from Hong Kong. Yuhi Sakaguchi and Ryo Hirakawa, another fun team at Itochu Inex Team Impul. JMS PMU Saramo Inging with Hiroki Ishiura, one of the oldest drivers in the category, and rookie Sho Suboi, who won 17 of his 19 races last year in All Japan F3. And then, of course, we get to Team Lama with returning veteran Kazuya Oshima. And folks, Svetlana would be proud. Artem Markelov.
The entertainment is here, ladies and gentlemen. The entertainment is here. Artem Markelov has arrived.
Yeah.
Everybody, not.
Yeah. First year with the new SF19 car, which, again, you can play in Gran Turismo Sport.
It's a fun time.
Oh, yes. So a new car with a new halo, wider tires. It's a much faster car. You get more what is effectively push to pass. And the season starts this weekend at Suzuka Circuit.
Looks like we got something to talk about next week.
That might be the only thing we talk about. I'm here for a Super Formula special episode.
Good luck, guys. We're getting a 30-minute episode next week. Let's just say keeping it 101 might have to go a bit long to pad it out next week. It's a bit like when you've got the mixture for the Kool-Aid and it can't quite get a full jug. You've got to put a bit of water in there to fill it out. That's what next week's show is going to be, basically. Have fun with that. Basically, we might have to bring Cam in for a rant about the state of play of the ACO. That's how desperate we are at this point. It's not ideal, but we've got to live with it.
Look, he's got experience driving these SF19s in video games.
It helps.
Yeah,
but
if the championship's anything like last year, with it going down to literally the final lap of the final race, it's going to be a good season.
Is that also going to be a Netsco Racing, RJ?
They are working on it. If they cannot get it, the artist formerly known as Motors TV, part of the Monolith, will have it on their service.
Yeah, we'll have to subdue ourselves to the Monolith.
Yeah.
$4 whole. Can we split this three ways? I think we might struggle here. Oh, dear. So are we done being cheapskates for this episode? I think we are.
Yeah.
So check it out on the Monolith. That'll be fun. Basically, you can catch us real quick before we get out of here for a whole five minutes.
We're not quite done yet. There's one small thing I need to mention. Over last weekend, the Formula 3 season has officially begun with the split underway with Formula Regional European Championship doing their debut race at Monza.
They were
at Paul Ricard. Their rival series, Formula Renault Euro Cup, was in Monza. This split is going to get confusing really quickly.
Also,
I'm already confused.
Can I just point out, Gran Turismo Sport champion Igor Fraga already has two podiums and is third in the championship ahead of David Schumacher. Get in there, lad.
Yes.
Go on, boy.
Over in Paul Ricard, which I'm just gonna call this series Formula European Regional because it's way less confusing for me. So yeah, in their opening weekend, Frederic Vasseur won both races. Prima were dominant in race one. Prima got a 1-2-4, and in the next race, I believe they also got a 1-3-4, and there were only 10 cars, so there were only 10 cars.
I was
going to
say, isn't that series only got like 10 cars in it? I saw a friend of the show, Josh Sittel, mention that, and I was like, really, 10? It's like watching Indy Lights.
But yeah, they have fewer cars, but a more star-studded field, while Formula Renault Euro Cup has 22 cars, but it's hard for me to find any race reports because the Monolith, their latest story about the Euro Cup was from last year when it was announced that Alonso was going to have a team in the series, and then after that, no news.
Oh, God almighty.
And I've yet, for obvious reasons, I've yet to watch Euro Cup races. All the races are broadcast for free on YouTube with English commentary. Formerly European Regional, it's hard to find any content because I think the only place you can watch it is on the Italian Automobile Club's website. And they only have Italian commentary, and the video quality doesn't go higher than 480p.
What year is this? 2008?
This is going to be a long, painful split.
Oof. King, is now your new job to follow this series. Good luck.
No!
There is always room on the All Japan F3 bandwagon, I'm just saying.
Oh, dear lord.
And that's
well, King recovers from his new downgrade on the podcast. I'll get out of here for the time being. Places you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. Check out all the new Dre vlogs that are on there. Sincerely, thank you all so much for the kind words regarding them. It's actually, I've been really motivated on these, and you see, you guys seem to like me bringing back the old school style of just rambling into a microphone. It doesn't sound like it should work on paper, but somehow it does. Don't ask me how. That's how the podcast got started. And I guess we're doing all right there, so must be doing something right. Thank you, everyone that's been watching. I do really appreciate it. So thank you all so much for that. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. Sorry, I had to laugh a second there, because Toki just spelled out charisma in like small, solid letters. I'm not that funny. God. Really? I'm also on Twitter @motorsport_101. Our personal handles @Harrison101HD @RJ O'Connell. Follow him. He had to work really hard on that layout for Super GT stuff. He needs some follows. Send him nice things. And @RyanEricKing. And if you're really lucky, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to this show and the show we're going to produce later this week as well, and all of our shows for that matter. And if you like us even more, you can back us at the $10 level, and you can get into the supporters club on our Discord server. And listen to these shows live as they go out. Massive thanks to the huge amount of people that were watching along with us here. Toki, Steve, Henry, Charles, Jason, Ryan, and Cam. I see you all in there. Thank you all so much. I love that it all said we're all going to fuck off for 180, which I think is great. Which I think is hilarious. To be fair, it is like 10:30 in the UK right now, as I'm already talking, which means it's going to be even later for some of our other European friends, like Jason, who's like an hour later than us. So, not ideal. We should really record earlier. Blame the Americans. That's all I always say. It's their fault. But I joke. I love you guys. And all of that can be found on our website, motorsport101.com. Check it out there for all direct content as well. We'll be back later this week, or in real time, about 10 minutes, for episode 188, the Biking Edition, I guess you could say, as we talk about MotoGP at the Circuit of the Americas, IndyCar at Long Beach, and World Superbikes at Assen. All of that, and probably a whole bunch of obscure references, and maybe some more phrasing on episode 188. Until then, I've been Andre Harrison, they've been Ryan King and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys later this week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.